You're listening to the Rubber Chickens Unleashed.
Hammer runs up for NC State, puts his foot into it end over end, and we're underway. Debo Samuel takes it at the three. Up the middle of the field, makes one cut, got a block. Can Debo run away at the 30? They can't get him at the 35, 40. Debo down the near sideline, 30. Nobody going to get him. Debo Samuel goes 97 yards. No flags. Touchdown, Carolina. Touchdown, Debo Samuel. That's the way you start a season off. Bentley under center. Ball's being motion, fakes, Bentley, got a roll right, he's in trouble, gets away from one man, cranks up, throws downfield, Debo's running for it, diving, caught, touchdown, Debo Samuel, are you kidding me? A busted, broken play, and Debo runs to the far corner, and Jake Bentley put it on the numbers, 39 yards, oh my goodness. Fourth and goal from the 10 with 15 seconds to go. In the gun, bouncing backwards, under some pressure, rolling right, giving chase. Finley throws late down the middle of the field. Tipped up, incomplete. Incomplete. Turnover on downs. Turnover on downs. The Gamecocks hold. The Gamecocks hold, and Carolina, with 6 seconds to go, is going to win this one 35-28.
Called Lola and I took her back to my place. Feeling guilty, feeling scared. Hidden cameras everywhere. Stop! Hold on. Stay in control. Girl, I want you here with me. But I'm really not as cool as I'd like to be. Cause there's a wreck under my bed.
Hello everybody and welcome to TRC Unleashed. This is episode number 96. It is our first podcast since April, so you know that the Final Four is over and it is football season. I'll tell you, I kind of like that. One, because I don't like you guys very much, and I have, you know, the less I interact with you, the better. But second, I think our absence makes us a little more, makes the audience a little more fond of us. So it makes you people in the, you know, listening to us, you know, you kind of long to hear from TRC every once in a while. It makes it more special, right?
Yeah, it's like Taylor Swift. Just normally she puts out an album every 2 years, and now she's waited 3 years to put one out. And even though her new songs off the new one suck, she's like getting the most downloads of all time.
Right. It's like ESPN automatically jumped on that horrible song as their theme. I'm your host, Buck. G-Man is on the line with us, and that the other voice you heard there is not T-Bone. And I will tell you, unfortunately, T-Bone is, he's alive, okay? Not unfortunately he's alive, but he's, we're glad he's alive.
Dead to us, but he's
dead to us, but he is alive, as far as we know. He texted with us this afternoon. T-Bone has some, he's going to be on hiatus for a little while. We're going to see him in about a month and try to bring him back to the TRC fold. But until then, we're going to do this Kelly Ripa thing, you know, when Michael Strahan quit. You know, we're just going to bring in a different person every week. And this week it is Connor Tapp from 24/7 Sports, formerly of the Half Cocked Show, formerly of Garnet and Black Attack. So a lot of you Gamecocks out there know him. Connor, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Half Cocked Show still like technically sort of alive. So I wouldn't say formerly of Half Cocked Show.
It's really not, though. It's, you, yes, you wouldn't be coming on this show if Half Cocked was still alive. Come on.
It is depressing, though. Like, I still am like steadily picking up followers to our Half Cocked Show Twitter account,
yeah,
at a much higher rate than the account that I currently tweet from. So,
the account you pay no attention to is getting more,
yeah,
followers.
Yeah.
Well, you know, glad to have you on the show, and maybe you will be our Ryan Seacrest eventually. So
I'm honored to be mentioned in the same breath as Kelly Ripa and Ryan Seacrest. I feel like I'm in great company here.
So We kicked off on Saturday. What did we enter the game at? Was it what was the line? Six and a half points in favor of
something
NC State.
Like that.
Yeah,
something favorite. Like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So NC State was getting a ton of love. I really thought this was going to be a toss up. I mean, I felt like this was probably a 3-point game one way or the other, or a 1-score game one way or the other, and that's what it wound up being. Literally came down to the last play of the game. But a lot of people are saying, boy, South Carolina shocked everybody and surprised everybody, and you know, NC State was good, but it doesn't surprise me that we were able to take them out. Gee, what impressed you the most about our team on Saturday?
Well, I just thought in general we were an improved football team. You know, I thought obviously we're not world beaters. We still have a lot of improvement to do, but I thought all in all, we were an improved, solid football team. I thought at both lines of scrimmage, we were better than I expected us to be. I thought of course, the running game was non-existent, but we held up well in pass protection. And the defensive line, I thought, held their own pretty well. And, I mean, they're on the field for 99 plays, which is kind of ridiculous, but they did better than I expected.
Yeah, I looked up our last three games. Our opponents have run, I think it was 89, 80, and 99 plays on our defense. So we gotta do something about that. But right before the half, when we were still up 21-14, and we were punting to NC State, and they get the ball with, you know, whatever it was, a minute and 47 left. I'm thinking, yeah, you know, at worst we're gonna hold them to a field goal. And we're going to go into halftime, you know, leading and feel good about it. And then NC State scores, and then I heard the halftime statistics, and I was blown away. I mean, that they had so much yardage and so many more first downs than we did. And, you know, yes, G-Man is raising his hand.
I want to make one comment about this whole yardage thing, though, because we've been hearing this for, you know, 2 days now, how they gained 500 and something yards and we gained 200 and something. And granted, they gained a lot of yards. They ran up and down the field on us like crazy, and I get that. But people don't take into account the fact that we ran the opening kickoff back for a touchdown, right? Right? We didn't have an opportunity to get any yards, offensive yards on that possession. And another time, LeMond runs a punt back to the 50. We don't have any opportunity to gain any yards on that possession. And another time, we recovered a fumble on the 14. So, you know, we led the entire football game. So this whole yardage thing, yeah, they outgained us, and they had ran better offense than us. I would say for, I don't know, a slightly better offense than us. But the yardage thing, it's really overblown.
It sounds
and
like
first down, same thing.
It sounds like to me you're saying there are three phases to a football game.
Correct.
And you have to perform well in all three phases.
That would be correct.
I don't know, Connor. I'm one of the guys who is bothered by this yardage total still. I felt good about what my eyes saw from our defensive line and our linebackers, but what's going to happen against Missouri this week? I'm naturally paranoid, so.
G-Man makes a good point about the discrepancy in the possessions and how that sort of changes the, you know, straight yardage totals. I mean, if you look at average gain per play, it was like a pretty close to a push. South Carolina averaged 4.9 yards per play, and NC State averaged 5.1. Apologies for the beeping. My wife has some things done in the oven.
I thought that was my washing machine. So it's fine. We've all got stuff going on here.
Between the two units, you look at the 35 points South Carolina ended up with, and now we've got a smoke alarm going off. All right.
You don't need to leave, do you? I want you to get out of there. No, the podcast isn't that important.
No. So anyway, I think what I was trying to say is, like, between the two units, like, I'm coming away a little bit more impressed with the defense, and especially given the fact that, as G-Man mentioned, they were on the field for 99 snaps, which is kind of incredible to think that with the game on the line in the fourth quarter that they forced a punt, a turnover, and two turnovers on downs for NC State's last possession. It's like, that's pretty clutch. And when you've been on the field for 99 plays, that's pretty awesome. And Will Muschamp's defense in South Carolina has been very much like a bend but don't break type of operation. And well, there's a whole lot of bending in the first half, and they were able to keep NC State out of the end zone in the second half a little bit more. So I was pretty excited about that, and conversely, kind of frustrated at the offense's inability to do – like, the offense can be great. There are great offensive players on this team, but there are stretches of play where there is just three and out after three and out, and it really puts the defense in a bind.
Yeah.
So I mean, and I don't want to harp too negative here, because Jake Bentley made some incredible plays. Debo Samuel made some incredible plays. And the fact that Jake Bentley is alive after going up against this NC State defensive line is, like, kind of awesome and underrated and cool.
Right. right.
That's the case. I'm looking at the third quarter possessions, three and out. There was a touchdown drive, and then there was a three and out. That's just tough for the
That's one of the reasons we were on the field for 99 plays is because we couldn't sustain anything.
Yeah. So and NC State's a really good defense, and more so on the defensive line than in the secondary, perhaps. But like, I came into this game thinking NC State, there's some things about NC State that creates a lot of problems for South Carolina, particularly the defensive line against the offensive line matchup. And South Carolina ended up with just 2.1 yards per rush on the day, which sort of tells you how that battle went. But South Carolina found a way to end up with more points than NC State did, which, like, the notion of a South Carolina team winning because of special teams is, like, kind of strange and foreign to me. And so, like, that's pretty cool. It's maybe not would I prefer South Carolina wins because they're just vastly outgaining the other team? Sure. But, like, that's not a bad thing to have in your tool belt if you need it.
Right.
Well, couple things there. One thing that is maybe overlooked a little bit in looking at our offensive performance in the second half is that we had terrible field position. I mean, that Chris Lamons, I know how he says his name, Lamons.
Lamons.
That play was
Lamons.
Lamons. Okay, Lamons. That play was a killer. You know, that put us back on the 3-yard line and put us in bad field position, really, for two possessions in a row. And I really thought that play might be the turning point of the game. I thought that might be, you know, the death knell, because it sort of harkened back to last year with that horrible punt return game that we had really all season. And I was like, oh God, here we go again with the punt return. But so that was a big factor, I think, in our lack of offensive production in the second half. But another thing, you know, we're talking about NC State running them down the field, but I mean, we held them to 7 points in the second half. I mean, that's pretty significant. Look at it, yeah, 7 points is all we gave up. And really, at some point in the first half, I thought the game might be, you know, 62-55 or something like that. So the defense, you know, we have a long way to go on defense. One of the reasons why we're on the field so much is we really don't have dynamic playmakers. You know, we're sort of average across the front, fairly average at linebacker, you know, really average everywhere. I think they're good players, but they're not dynamic, game-changing players where, you know, you're just making spectacular plays. And so that lends itself to, you know, sort of mediocre average play. But if that's what we have, and that's the way we're going to have to win. And that's what Muschamp has done both years, bend but don't break.
I think that's changing, though. I think you know, I don't know that, you know, DJ Wonnum is going to turn himself into a you know, top 10 draft pick at the end of his college career or something, but Wonnum was in the backfield a lot the other day. TJ Brunson had 16 tackles. A dude is in the first game of his sophomore year. He was all over the place out there. I don't know if you guys noticed the few plays that Sherrod Green was in there, he was a madman. Keir Thomas on the defensive line made some plays. I liked the defensive line rotation. I think you're right. Nobody is, you know, like, you don't right now see
Melvin Ingram.
Melvin Ingram. You don't see any Melvin Ingrams. You don't see any Jadeveon Clowneys, but there are some guys starting to make their presence known on the defense. You know, where we still, things are a little shaky. Jamarcus King is shaky. Fenton, I think, played pretty well. Jamias Williams did not play well on Saturday, but I'm not worried about him. I think he may have been just a little overhyped out there. You know, you mentioned Lamons on the punt return. I think I tweeted when that happened because I felt like he played a really good game. I only watched the game live, and then I watched a little bit of it today, and I tweeted when he did that on the punt return that he's good for one "what the hell is he doing" moment in just about every game. And so you can be sure that Chris Lamons is gonna make his presence known. He's either gonna punch somebody in the helmet or he's gonna, you know, drop a punt or something like that. But otherwise, he's gonna play a pretty good game.
And to his credit, he came really close to breaking another punt return that he had.
He did.
I missed that on the first one. I saw it on the coach's show today. I was like, man, if he didn't fall down, that might be six. So.
Connor, did you miss the opening kickoff too?
I did. Yeah, I don't know if it was a ESPN issue on my end. I forget what other game was going on at the time, but I was kind of playing it
for you guys. You guys that are Twitter guys, all I did was I went to Twitter and said, look for the channel, and it said ESPN News. Flipped over there.
No, here,
y'all were watching Clemson game.
So here's what happened, and here, this is the downside to a streaming service. I've got and G-Man is chewing ice. That's that rattling you keep hearing.
Sorry,
so I was on ESPN. And the Clemson game was on, and it was 56-3, and the little ticker across the bottom says, check the ESPN app. So I went to the ESPN app, and it was after 3:00, and it showed North Carolina State and South Carolina, but when you click on it, nothing would happen. So then I go back, and it says it's kicking off on ESPN News, but there were like 10 seconds left in the Clemson game, so I just kept it on ESPN, and I said, well, I'll just hang in there. Surely nothing will happen on the opening kickoff. And then, you know, as soon as they cut, you know, everybody was going crazy. So that's kind of how I missed it. But, man, Debo, how good is Debo? And how
real good.
How unexpectedly good is he? I mean, he's gradually grown on us, but he was, what, a three-star recruit? You know, Virginia Tech may have wanted him or something, but he is just – he is a man out there. And all these people are talking about –
late find in the recruiting class. And and then the first year he was here, he was hurt. So, you know, we just kept thinking, okay, we've heard all this hype, but is he really that good? Well, yeah, he's really that good.
So. Maybe Spurs' last good deed on his way out.
Right. I got y'all Debo. Y'all can't be mad at me. I got y'all Debo.
Yeah, I feel a little embarrassed because when people would talk about him as South Carolina's, like, the good receiver on South Carolina, I'm kind of like, I don't know. I think Bryan Edwards is kind of, like, a lot better. But and I mean, he had a fine game. But, yeah, Debo looked great.
I think we were saying that as late as the Vanderbilt game last year, because Bryan Edwards had a pretty big game receiving against Vanderbilt last year. Debo didn't do much. I think we had this conversation in the stadium. It's like, hey, Bryan Edwards is our new number one guy. He's going to be the man. And then, boy, Debo has been good. That one-handed catch was just amazing. And you know, Bentley is as advertised. He didn't put up, you know, Drew Lock numbers, but he was playing against a team that actually had a defense as well. But his scrambling ability, he had two scrambles in the first half on third downs that both those drives both ended in touchdowns. And I'm thinking, what if he doesn't get the, what if he gets sacked, or what if he comes up short? And he, both of them, I think he just got like a yard more than he needed as well. So that's just a, you know, anytime I think about intangibles, Connor, I think about chicken hoops and how he is just
how mad he's going to get at you for saying for talking about intangibles.
But having a, having a feel for the game and having moxie and having all that, there is something to be said for that. And Jake Bentley has that. You know, he's not going to go, you know, 32 for 55 for 450 yards and six touchdowns, more than likely. But, you know, he does what it takes to win the football game.
Yeah, he does. But someone is like Connor Shaw, but slower and with a better arm. Like, he's just like and maybe not quite the decision making. Like there were some iffy throws from him, I thought.
Oh, yeah.
It was not the best throwing game for him, but like absolutely when South Carolina needed yards, it like the reason Connor Shaw comes to mind is he just seemed to have this instinctual ability to scramble and get exactly the number of yards that South Carolina needed to pick up the first down.
Yeah.
He's way more slippery than he seems to have any right to be. Like, I don't look at him and be like, oh yeah, that's a guy that can make some moves outside of the pocket, but he does, and it's weird, and it's working. So awesome.
It's like he's got a Ben Roethlisberger quality about him. It's like that guy shouldn't be picking up first downs or getting away from pressure the way he does.
Yeah, he's quicker than Roethlisberger, but there were some throws though that, you know, yeah, he missed some throws, but there were some throws that were sort of like next level throws. I mean, obviously the one to Debo for the touchdown, but the one to Debo at the end of the game with the slant pattern was a big time throw, even though it just got us some yardage. And then the one to Edwards over the middle down around the 10. Remember that throw?
That was a bullet. Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, he's got some big time, what they call arm talent. There's no question about it. But he's not going to be a guy who's 80% passer or whatever. He's going to make some mistakes. But, you know, he only put the ball in jeopardy a couple of times, which is refreshing. You know, and he throws the ball away, too, when he needs to. He tosses in the stands.
And the one interception he threw was honestly probably better than whatever punt we would have gotten out of.
Right.
If that had fallen incomplete.
No question.
We'll have a debate about what's his name? Joseph Charlton?
Charlton, yeah.
About whether he was – John Whittle was defending him pretty robustly on Twitter today. But, you know, the thing about the offense that that got me, you know, no run game whatsoever. Tyson Williams did not get a carry. Turner got one carry. Hayden Hurst had one catch for minus 2 yards. None of the other tight ends caught the ball. Edwards caught, what, 3 balls, I guess? Shy Smith caught 3 balls. So there wasn't the variety that I think I expected going into the game. And, of course, it's just the first game. There's, you know, some new guys.
We had 55 plays, though. I mean, we didn't have the ball that much, honestly. I mean,
but is it – is it me, or is our run game, the plays that we call in the run game, really frustrating? Because it feels like we have one play that we run over and over and over again.
Well, there's not a lot of variety there for sure. But, I mean, they tried to get Debo on the jet sweep one time. I mean, honestly, I just don't think we had the ball that much. I think we would have seen a lot more. They had 40 more plays than we did, you know, and I think that it's pretty clear that we weren't going to be able to run the ball much. I don't think we saw much of the offense Saturday. I hope not. I think there's more to it than we know. Yeah.
And I saw a couple of people pointing out on Twitter over the past day that there were a couple of run plays where it seemed like Dowdle or whoever it was carrying the ball might have broken something off, but the blocking just absolutely was not there. And I think Helms was a person I saw singled out a lot as somebody who kind of missed his assignment. So I haven't watched closely enough to be able to offer an intelligent answer on like what the run calls were, but that is something that I have noticed over the past day or so.
Yeah.
Well, we're not there yet on offensive line. I mean, it's gonna be a work in progress there all year. He doesn't have the guys he needs, and you know we're gonna have to rely on the pass for the most part, I believe. But we'll see.
The pass,
and starting out against NC State, I mean, it might be Georgia, Clemson. I mean, that's about the only teams I can think of off the top of my head that are gonna be as good on the defensive front as NC State was. So,
and we should not be complaining. Nobody is, but nobody should be complaining about the pass blocking. I thought they held up really well, considering the only two sacks that North Carolina had were on – one was on a safety blitz, and the other one was on a blitz. I can't remember who got to Bentley, but I thought they held up well. But, yeah, we got to find something in the run game. Did anybody else notice, and I put this in the snap judgments that I wrote, that Bentley went under center one time late in the game? It may have been our last drive of the game on second down. He went under center. And that's the first time I can remember him going under center ever.
I did not notice that.
In a Kurt Roper offense. And part of it was a little disturbing because it's like you're – you know, you got whatever time was left, three and a half minutes or something like that, and you're going under center for the first time. There's that fear of the center quarterback exchange, you know, a fumble there. But the good part of it is I do love the fact that we're at least practicing under center. If we get into a fourth and one or a fourth and inches, we don't have to start Bentley and Dowdle or Williams or whoever it is back there, you know, 4 yards behind the line of scrimmage.
So you don't miss Spurrier's fourth and one speed option?
Oh, my God. Oh, man, that's something. So a couple of other things. Oh, special teams. So we talked about Debo. We talked about Le Mans a little bit. Who was kicking off? What's the kid's name?
Parker White.
Parker White did a nice job. Nice job.
Very nice job.
He does.
Four touchbacks out of six.
Yeah. And then Charlton. Mr. Charlton was the beneficiary of some very nice bounces, I think, to get his average up in the 41-42 yard area. And he'd hit one boomer that where he outkicked the coverage. And I saw somebody on Twitter today complaining that he outkicked the coverage. Like, you don't want your punter kicking it as far as they possibly can. That frightens me a little bit. But of course, he's a brand new guy. You know, first game kicking. So we'll see how that turns out. But I thought special teams and extra points. Wozniak, you know, Wozniak seemed to kick a nice high ball. I don't know if you guys noticed that, but
you kind of look
for that on the extra points is getting it up, and he kicked a nice high ball, so it'll be good to see him start kicking some field goals when he gets the chance. So any other thoughts, offense, defense, special teams? How do you feel about Will Muschamp at this point in his career with South Carolina?
I mean, I'm pleased. I think he's doing what he said he was going to do. He's going to build it gradually. He's going to build it the right way. He's trying to recruit. I mean, I think we're doing a nice job on the recruiting trail right now from everything I can tell. We've missed on some big-time defensive linemen, which – you know, we have our hat in the ring with those guys. Those are the most coveted players out there besides quarterbacks, and those are the only guys we really missed on that we've been after. I think he's doing a heck of a job out there recruiting, and that's where you're going to build it. And I think pretty soon he's going to get the defensive players that he wants in place. And once he does, I think we're going to be a heck of a lot better. you know, and offensively, I think we're already ahead of where he was at Florida.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we're definitely in best case scenario territory for where I thought South Carolina would be under Will Muschamp in year two. Offensively, Jake Bentley is great. But outside of that, I've still got some concerns about how this offense kind of disappears at times. I'm not really worried about the defense and how that will be managed under Will Muschamp. I don't think he has quite the players to kind of really play the way he wants to play right now, but he's still cobbling together a pretty solid unit that I think will be top 25-ish. I was a little surprised at how well Ryan Finley and company moved the ball, but Samuels and a couple of other of their guys look pretty legit. So maybe at the end of the season, we're looking back on 400 yards passing from Ryan Finley and being like, oh yeah, okay, I see how that happened. I think there's plenty of reason to be pleased with where things are. I think the next thing is to see, do things really kick up a notch on the recruiting trail? I think missing out on the number one overall recruit kid who went to Clemson is kind of hurts. But does South Carolina start getting that elite blue chip type of guy, the Jamias Williams guy, like on a consistent basis, is kind of the thing I'm looking for in the next step. Like in the near term, I think Muschamp's got this going in a very good direction, as long as your expectation level is like 7 or so wins for this season. From a math perspective and a like beating a good team perspective, like beating NC State is huge, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as the recruiting is concerned, I mean, it's going to be hard to beat Clemson right now. They just won the national championship. You know, I mean, these kids are 18 years old. I'm sorry to bring that up. But you know, it's going to be hard to beat, you know, for those elite kids. You know, we're going to have to build it with solid players that
a good job. You know, finding it, like being very Frank Martin like in like finding guys that can kind of contribute immediately that are like mid to high 3-star guys.
Correct. Yeah, and you're right. And you know, we have to realistically look at what we're doing. I mean, we're recruiting in a state that produces 25 D1 prospects a year generously, maybe not that many. And you split some of those with Clemson, then you got to go into Georgia, you got to fight them, you got to go to Florida, you got to fight everybody in Georgia and Florida. Now we're going to Tennessee, we're going to Alabama, we're going to Virginia. I mean, we're going to North Carolina. I mean, it's tough, but you know, we do have some fertile recruiting grounds around us, but you know, we're limited in what we can do, unfortunately, by the fact that we share the state with another team that I won't mention their name. Again. So, anyway, I mean, I think he's doing a really good job. And, you know, we just need to be patient in that we might be a better football team, but it might not necessarily mean we win a lot more football games.
Yeah, you know? I think that's especially true this year. I saw some stat that was like South Carolina had the highest increase in strength of schedule difficulty from last year to this year. So I think the team is definitely a lot better than it was last year. That just might not necessarily show up in the record. And that was maybe something I thought more prior to beating NC State.
You just beat a junior and senior laden NC State team. That was the fifth year of Dave Duren's tenure. He's been building towards this season. We went out there and beat him. You know, granted, 15 plays go one the other way. Any one of 15 plays go the other way, we could lose that ball game. But we beat them, and then when we're supposedly a young, growing team, and they're a veteran team, so
that crossed my mind. If you're an NC State fan, how frustrating must that be that they started 11 seniors, and this really is their year. You know. and they can't beat a middling, you know, South Carolina team that's still, you know, basically rebuilding. That's got to be terribly frustrating for those guys. So yeah, I think you know, Connor hit the nail on the head. I think things have gone as well as can be expected with Will Muschamp to this point. I think he's great with the media. He, you know, garners a few laughs every time he gets behind the mic, and has done a really nice job. So let's give some rubber chicken awards. And G-Man, you usually like to go last.
Right.
Well, you want to go last again?
Yes, I do.
So Connor,
nobody better steal my rubber chicken, by the way. Don't steal it.
I know you've probably never listened to the show. So what we do is we give out a rubber chicken award. So it's basically an MVP for the Gamecocks. So So tell us who your rubber chicken is.
Man, I was preparing for this all day and like kind of trying to think outside of the box, assuming that y'all wouldn't like have covered the good ones. So you know what? I'll be basic and go with Deebo Samuel. You know, one of the bridges from the Spurrier era to the present, and I was kind of not doubting him necessarily, but just didn't think that he was maybe our premier offensive weapon, and at least through one game, he's kind of making me look pretty stupid. Deebo Samuel, I'll give my rubber chicken award to that young man.
Good call.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to go with T.J. Brunson in the middle of that defense with 16 tackles. And I'll tell you who he made me think of is a guy who just graduated from Vanderbilt last year, Zach Cunningham. I admired Zach Cunningham from afar because he seemed to have double-digit tackles every game. I'm like, man, where is our Zach Cunningham? Where is it? And Sky Moore's kind of been that. But Sky can disappear every once in a while. But Brunson seems like the kind of guy who could be that double-digit tackle guy for us week in and week out. So T.J. Brunson.
Hey, a little bit of trivia about TJ. TJ graduated high school with my oldest son, and when he was in elementary school, came to my house for a birthday party. So, anyway.
Did you get his autograph when he was in elementary
school? I didn't know he was going to be starting for the Gamecocks.
You're going to be a Gamecock someday, young man. I can feel it. You know,
good kid, TJ.
He was also the first guy that Will Muschamp went to see after he was hired, wasn't he?
That's right.
That ring a bell?
As soon as he was hired, he went over to Richland Northeast High School and went to see him because at the time, you know, it was a little up in the air with our recruits. And I think he made the right call. 16 tackles at middle linebacker. He needed that kid.
Right.
All right. Here's my out of the box rubber chicken award. Somewhat in honor of T-Bone, who's not here because he tends to go out of the box a good bit with his picks. But
right,
I'm going to go with our defensive coordinator, T-Rob.
T-Rob.
You know why? Because of this right here. Does anybody remember
the
game?
Uh-huh.
The timeout?
Yeah.
Okay.
Myas matched up against
Yes.
Samuels.
Well, actually, I think it was – I'm not sure it was Samuels. Maybe it was, but it was – I thought it was their 6'5 guy, their big, tall guy.
They ran
everybody to the other side, and they isolated him over there on their big receiver, and they were going to run a fade. And they were on the 10-yard line, our 5'9 guy versus their big, tall receiver. And I think the chances are they would have been successful, okay? And they tie the ball game there if they do that. And I think we all know where the momentum was going into overtime, right?
Right.
So
yeah.
I think that was a pretty heady timeout and was kind of reminiscent. You remember the one when Tennessee's coach, what's the guy's name?
Butch Jones?
Butch Jones, he called timeout against us, you remember, a couple of years ago at a critical time in that game where they beat us and stops on play, and they ended up being a huge critical timeout and I thought pretty much saved the game for them.
Yeah.
Same feeling I had watching this. I mean, I think if they complete that pass and go take us into overtime, I think we'd lose.
That was remember when it seemed like it was the case that Butch Jones was an extremely effective game manager?
We're gonna talk about Mr. Jones here in just a minute. But that's a good call, G Man, because that was a great camera shot too. They showed
Call timeout. Call timeout.
Right. Muschamp is looking out there. And it was kind of funny because Muschamp was the one who looked confused. And T-Rob is the one, you see him mouthing, timeout, 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 and Muschamp runs on the field and calls a timeout. So it's kind of a neat moment between coaches there that you don't get to see a whole lot of. So those are our rubber chickens for the week. Let's dance around the SEC for a moment. There were, early on, not a lot of surprises. Let me run down this. LSU beats BYU 27-0. BYU doesn't cross midfield at any point during the game with the football. Vandy, a little surprising with a 28-6 win at Middle Tennessee. Commodores off to a good start. Ole Miss beat South Alabama. Mississippi State over Charleston Southern. Kentucky goes to Southern Miss and struggles a little bit and wins. We'll talk about our next opponent, Missouri, in just a minute. Georgia handled Appalachian State maybe a little easier than a lot of people thought they would, 31-10. Jacob Eason going to be out 2 to 6 weeks is what they said today with a sprained knee. Auburn whips Georgia Southern. The big game, Alabama beats Florida State 24-7 in what was really not – not nearly as good a game as we thought. Arkansas beats Florida A&M 49-7. Michigan, talking about Muschamp being here and things going as well as possible. What is going on down at Florida with Jim McElwain? I mean, they scored two touchdowns, both on interception returns. Their offense was only able to generate 3 points. They've still got, hellish quarterback situation, apparently. Even though rumor has it Malik Zaire is enrolled down there.
Yeah, not official until he gave up an offensive touchdown.
And then last night, that UCLA Texas A&M game was as fun as it gets. I mean, that is as fun as it gets watching college football. And, the SEC homers will be mad at me for pulling against Texas A&M. But, man, I was pulling for UCLA to make that comeback. And it was
once they were threatening to come back, it's like, you want to see the most awesome thing you can possibly see. So why not?
Right.
Especially when you don't really care. You just pull for the upset. But that Rosen kid, man, wow. I mean, he was something else.
And he was smooth, solid. He was not rattled at all by the situation.
Yeah, but think about this, though. I know I'm interrupting you just a second, but think about this. Francois, Florida State quarterback, out for the year. Jacob Eason out 2 to 6 weeks with a sprained knee. And Texas A&M's quarterback broke his ankle all in week one.
Yeah. We don't even want to talk about that. We don't want to talk about that possible situation with South Carolina.
Yeah.
And going on as we speak, Tennessee just scored to pull to within 7 points of Georgia Tech. It's 21-14. So by the time you're listening to this, you'll know the outcome of that game. We had a little debate on Twitter about who are you pulling for. And the vast majority said Georgia Tech, I'm not pulling for – most of it was I hate Tennessee so much, there's no way I could possibly pull for them. I don't get the conference loyalty thing. I'm here for South Carolina all the way, but I want everybody else to be bad. And I know the argument against that is if everybody else is bad, then your conference schedule, your conference strength is not going to be very good and blah, blah, blah. Well, we know that's not going to happen. We know the SEC is going to be good in football. And if we win enough football games and make it to the SEC championship game, and if we, make it beyond, we don't really need to worry about strength of schedule right now, guys. Maybe in a few years, you know, we'll have that opportunity. We'll, you know, be playing for a spot in the college football playoff or something like that. But right now, we're playing for a spot in the Belk Bowl. And the Belk Bowl doesn't really look at strength of schedule. They'll just say, hey, you're the fifth place team in the SEC. You're coming to Charlotte for your bowl game. So I'm not a big conference homer kind of guy here personally.
I got two words for you.
What's that?
Go Tech.
You're always a pretty big Tech fan anyway, growing up.
I guess
more basketball. Mark Price.
Bobby Crimmins and Mark Price, man. But yeah, Go Tech. I like their offense. I like watching that triple option thing. It's just fun. It takes me back to the Oklahoma teams and the Colorado teams back in the 80s. I love watching that option offense. I don't want to run it, but I like watching it.
Connor, have you ever heard of Jamel Holloway? Does that ring a bell?
Vaguely. I couldn't say why, but it does sound familiar.
Billy Sims, Jamel Holloway, who were some of those other cats who used to run for Oklahoma? Jamel Holloway was a wishbone quarterback, and Billy Sims and some of those guys. Go back and for you youngsters, go back and find some YouTube clips of 1970s, 1980s era Oklahoma teams running the wishbone.
It was great to watch, man.
Oh, my gosh. Those quarterbacks, they'd get 12 or 15 yards down the field and would pitch the ball. You know, the tailback was always trailing them.
How about Darian Hagan?
Darian Hagan at Colorado?
Colorado, yeah. I mean, that guy was a wizard. Man, I love watching that stuff. But And Marcus Dupree, remember him? They went to the eye for him.
Yeah.
So never was.
Yeah, that's right. Best it never was. But I'm a good Tech man. Love some Tech.
Speaking of,
living in Tennessee now, I mean, there's like I'm surrounded by Tennessee and Alabama fans in a way that I never have been before, and I mean, there's really like. Having experienced Clemson losing to Georgia Tech, there's like really nothing more hilarious than somebody losing to Georgia Tech. Ryan Nanny has described Georgia Tech as like a 10-sided die. Like, I mean, you're probably gonna get like a 1 through a 5, but maybe on the right day they'll roll a 10 and just kill you. It looks like that's what's happening now. It's 21-14, and like the frustration of losing to a triple option team. I mean, as a graduate of a university that for some reason insists on scheduling one triple option team per year, it's awesome and hilarious to see someone else possibly go down to it. And you know, so that's like my specific reason for. Wanting Georgia Tech to beat Tennessee, but like also you should want chaos for your rivals. You should want coaching uncertainty. You want it to be difficult for them to recruit. And right now, for all the bad on the field situations at Tennessee over the past couple years, they're recruiting really well in the class of 2018. Losing to Georgia Tech is going to sow some discord among some of those people who are committed to them.
Right.
And as much as I know South Carolina fans, including myself, kind of like really hated this narrative at the time, but when South Carolina stepped up as like one of the front runners in the SEC East, it was because there was all this uncertainty at Tennessee, at Florida, at Georgia. It's kind of a necessary condition for South Carolina returning to prominence that bad stuff is happening at Tennessee, Florida, and Georgia. So,
right here.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, if we're maybe some point down the road, as Buck said, we'll be worried about the 10th decimal place in our strength of schedule rating. But as it currently stands, like I think, you know, just wishing ill on your rivals is the way to go.
Oh yeah. Yeah, you can stay, Connor. Good. Good. Because that's the way we feel exactly around here.
Especially Georgia. I hate Georgia so much.
First down Tech.
And that's one team as we're sitting here watching the ball game, not paying attention. The podcast is about to go off the rails. It's funny talking about Georgia Tech. I always, at least one time per season, a bowl projection has us playing Georgia Tech somewhere, and it just makes me break out in a cold sweat. That is one thing I never, ever want to see as long as Paul Johnson is the coach at Georgia Tech, because as bad as Wofford and the Citadel and all these other schools whip us with the triple option, I can't imagine a school with bigger, stronger, faster players doing it to us. So,
yeah, and Paul Johnson, he's the master too, man.
He does not have a play card on the sideline.
Right.
He calls every play out of his head. You watch him on the sideline. Right. He pulls a guy over. He thinks for a second, and then he whispers the play in the kid's ear and runs out. The kid runs out on the field. That's crazy.
That's old school, man. I like that.
Yeah.
And it's one thing when like Georgia Tech jumps up and upsets Florida State or Clemson. Like, they don't have a choice. They're in their conference. But
right.
When it's a non-conference deal, it's like you don't have anyone to blame but yourself for the stupid decision that you made to schedule Georgia Tech.
Right.
So it's just really funny to me. Oh, God, Georgia Tech's going deep. Oh, God. Okay, Georgia Tech's going to win this game.
My feed's a little bit behind yours. I'm going to have to watch
it. Yeah, you saw it before I did. Yeah.
So is this the white kid? No. Georgia Tech's got like an outstanding receiver that's this white kid that nobody wanted. Anyway, that's really getting off track. Hey, how about Missouri?
Yeah, we're getting way off the rails.
I'm sure you guys are thrilled to listen to us watch a football game. So, Missouri, Saturday. Feel good, feel bad, feel neutral?
I don't feel too good knowing what they can do on offense. I mean, I think we're going to be able to move the ball much better than we moved it on this Saturday, but I mean, I think it's going to be a similar ball game that we just watched. I think they're going to march up and down the field. Locke is very similar quarterback to this Finley guy. He's a good passer. They usually have a bunch of good receivers, and they got a really good running back, some kid named Crockett, I think. So, I mean, I think we're going to have to score, 38, 42 points to win this ball game. I hate to say it, but that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I think the opening over-under came out at like 74 points, which is really high, but feels about right. I was kind of looking at some of the stats of like how Missouri beat Missouri State, and it seems like what they really like to do was throw a bunch of short passes that they broke for long passes, which right. South Carolina is going to give them that short pass. As I think we all know too well, but it's just a matter of keeping them from breaking it from big gains, which is what our defense is designed to do. So as long as that design becomes execution, I think South Carolina has a good chance to win this game, but you never know. And it's on the road.
We got to run the ball better. I mean, to run the ball better than we did. And I think we will, but got to.
I will warn you, Gamecock fans, Saturday night is going to be terribly frustrating because Missouri is going to move the ball and they're going to score. So we're going to have to create some turnovers. We're going to have to match them score for score. Yes, I think our defense is better than Missouri State's, but they still scored 72 points and ran up 800 yards on Missouri State. So how much better can we possibly be? You know, hopefully a lot better, but I still think it's going to be another nail biter. It's going to be a hard game to watch, and you're going to be angry at some point during that game. Of course, we're usually angry at some point during every South Carolina game, so I don't know how it'll really be any different. So, Any closing thoughts as we wrap this up and get ready to watch the rest of the fourth quarter of Georgia Tech and Tennessee?
I mean, the chances there for South Carolina to start like 4-0, maybe. Yeah, you have 4-0, and then you get go to Texas A&M. So, I mean, that's – I think Missouri, Kentucky, and even to a degree Louisiana Tech are kind of toss-ups. But, I mean, you know, the opportunity is there. And if South Carolina is 4-0, I mean, people are going to be talking about the program, and that's not going to be a bad thing. So it could be an exciting season, you know, for those of us who remember, not that it was super long ago, but, you know, 11 and 2 seasons, it's not going to be exciting on that level, I don't think. But South Carolina, I think, is going to be in pretty much every game it plays in. Maybe, who knows, maybe Clemson gets out of hand, but that's really about it. Yeah. It's going to be a fun season. Some weird stuff's going to happen, and I think South Carolina is probably going to a bowl game, and it's going to be a fun time watching this team.
Yeah.
Well, I think this is going to sound like coach speak, but I'm really pleased that we're 1-0 and we got that win.
It's better than 0-1, from what I understand.
That's right. And that game could have easily gone the other way. If, you know, like I said, any like 15 different plays, it could have gone, you know, the other way. And, you know, think about the pass interference call at the end of the game that wiped out their drive that one time. I mean, there's just so many plays in that game that offensive pass interference call that were influential and helped us win that ball game. But and we played clean football. We've got to continue to play clean football, generate turnovers for this team to be successful. I think if we lose a turnover battle, I think it's a very good chance we're going to lose the ball game. Yeah. Against all these teams that we are very evenly matched with. We're going to be evenly matched pretty much with Missouri. We're going to be pretty much evenly matched with Kentucky, give or take. And, you know, you got to play clean football, and we'll see how that goes.
All right. Some very nice analysis from Connor and the G-Man. So I think that's going to wrap it up for week one. Great to have college football back. Great to be 1-0 as opposed to 0-1. And, you know, 15-0 is still within our sights, so we'll just keep plugging away, right? All right, for Connor and for the G-Man, I am Buck, and this has been TRC Unleashed. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next week. I know you will understand. There's a time device inside of me. I'm a self-destruction man. There's a rip under my bed, and there's a little green man in my head. And said you're not going crazy, you're just a bit sad, 'cause there's a man in you, not in you.